What is the fastest growing international crime network that the world has ever seen? It's already passed the illegal arms trade, and soon it will pass the drug trade. Because someone can sell a bag of cocaine one time, but they can sell a child 5 to 10 times per day. On July 4th, witness the gripping reality of true heroism in the film Sound of Freedom. From Angel Studios, the force behind His Only Son and The Chosen, comes an extraordinary true story of courage and redemption. Experience the spirit of hope and the power of human resilience. The goal is for 2 million people to get into theaters the week of July 4th and remember the 2 million children who are trafficked every year. Visit angel.com/freedom. That's angel.com/freedom. Buying tickets in advance sends an important message. To show your support, purchase tickets for yourself or pay it forward so they can pack theaters the week of July 4th. Visit angel.com/freedom.
Today is a day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. And I'm Todd Herman, my honor this week to fill in for Dana on The Dana Show. Also remember to go to danalash.com, subscribe to Chapter and Verse, which is Dana's newsletter. Characteristically well done. She comes from a writing background, and it's a way to consume her thoughts wherever you're at. A question for you. In your house, if your teenager, if you suspect your teenager of having drugs, and your teenager says, you can't search my room. I forbid you to search my room. In fact, it's lock and key. I own it. Your response would be, what? And if you had at your business, you had an employee you thought was perhaps goofing off during work online, and you came and said, we are going to look at your computer to see if you're goofing off. And the employee said, no, I'm sorry. I've locked the computer down and I put non-intrusion software on it. You cannot look into my computer. That's mine. Your response would be what? My question is, why on earth have we put up with this dynamic that has allowed the figurehead, and not just him, but all public officials, all griftocrats, to treat us in that similar way? Incidentally, speaking of Biden, did you see that he has news? And I don't know that Putin knows this, but the figurehead Biden today came out and announced that Putin is, in fact, losing the war in Iraq. And I wonder if Putin said, wait, we're back in Iraq? So the reason I ask this is that the White House made the decision to hide from us Hunter Biden's visits to that White House, despite the fact that Barack Hussein Obama, God bless Rush Limbaugh, I say that just to remember the Maha. That was his nickname, one of his nicknames for Obama. The White House had touted, we're going to be this transparent entity, yet they delete and erase from us Hunter Biden's visits to the White House as if we don't know that he goes there. The reason I ask the question on the parental front or the paternal front or the boss front is, under what other circumstances do we allow the people who work for us or who live in our homes and we power with our economic resources, what other times do we allow them to say, no, you don't get to do that? All this information, all of it should be stored in the cloud. Every drop of information should be stored in the cloud. And what should be reversed is they should have to make a claim to us that we don't get to see it. The default setting should be that we see everything. Because even when they don't know that we see everything, or even actually when they're aware that we can go instantly look at something, they still try to hide it. Do you know who, there's a reporter who constantly is being censored by the White House. And he is a reporter for Africa Today. Simon Abada is his name. He appears to be a conservative guy, and he goes on Fox News. Therefore, clearly he is a white supremacist as a black man, which is entirely possible, as you know. You can be white adjacent. And as you know, conservatism in black people is adjacent to white supremacy and, in fact, literal Nazism. So perhaps that's why they've done this. The White House has edited out this reporter from their press briefings. This is the spokeslier, KGP, spokeslier version 4. Whatever. And let's just be clear that she has her job because she is determined that she's a woman. So she has it for that reason. Don't know how she's done that. And because she has darker skin and because she is same-sex attracted, her capabilities stop there. She's got to be capable at something, but not good at lying. So this is her trying to silence this reporter in audio clip number one.
Journalist or any journalist that is just trying to do their job. And so I just want to be very clear about that.
Discriminating against me for the past 9 months.
Stop. How is she discriminating you?
No, she called on you. She just gave you a few questions. I just need a question in 9 months.
Ask a question.
Please.
Go ahead,
allow me to do my job and ask my question. When you say that you are the journalist are being discriminated against, I've been in this briefing.
If this continues, we're going to end the press briefing.
I've been in this briefing. I'm trying to ask you
one. You're being incredibly rude. You're pretty rude. You're being incredibly rude. You're talking over your colleague. You're talking over your colleague.
I'm not talking about the colleague.
So he's trying to get a question, and she hasn't called him in 9 months. Was it Kamala Harris? It was. Wasn't it Kamala Harris who went to Africa to celebrate her African roots? Because her family's long lineage, of course, coming from Africa. And I didn't know this, but Kamala Harris alerted me to this fact. India is in Africa. Well, it has to be, because that's where she comes from. She comes from India, but she went down there to celebrate her African roots. Even in that, you would think at that time it might be a topic of conversation that you'd want to engage a reporter who's literally writing, I think it's called Africa Today, but for an African publication. But no, not that. We're going to go to our same friends at MSNBC and elsewhere. So the White House edited, removed, disappeared, deplatformed a black man from the press briefing. You'll hear this in audio clip number two.
Not just to the PRC, but to other countries all around the world. Now, what they do about this is going to be for them to speak to. All I can do is tell you what President Biden's focused on, and that's making sure, A, we're staying.
He's clearly acting secretary, and we are doing everything that we can during the budget negotiation to make those calls, to have conversations with senators on the Hill through. Gotcha.
He's gone. He's disappeared. Hunter Biden's not in the visitor log. Simon Abada is disappeared from history. All this stuff is ours. It's a cliche to say they work for us. And when you say that, of course, Joe Biden says, shut up, fat. Shut up. How about a push-up contest? Did you see Robert F. Kennedy's push-ups, by the way? Pretty good. I'm a guy who works out a little bit. Pretty good. He's not super strong, but beefy. Kind of old man. You know, muscle ages and it looks different than it does in a young man. Oh, and I love this because there's the side-by-side comparison people are doing between RFK Jr. and Bill Gates. And Bill looks in horrible health. He didn't always look that unhealthy, by the way. But he looks in horrible health. There's the side-by-side of RFK Jr. with his shirt off and his jeans lifting down on the beach in California. One guy's a health expert. One guy's, you know, supposedly a health expert. Who do you choose to take advice from? The pot-bellied and sick-looking Bill Gates or RFK Jr.? I love the response from leftists who get into that thread and say, steroids are not healthy. That's not steroids. That's working out a bit. Maybe some testosterone increase. In any case, this should all be ours. Everything that these people say should be in a cloud. We own it. They can make a claim as to whether it should be deleted or not. They're deleting RFK Jr. They're banning his videos and interviews from Facebook and from YouTube. They're continuing down this path. You think that we don't see. Now, from a spiritual perspective, because to me, everything comes through a kingdom view, we evangelicals call it. Good luck erasing truth, because guess who is truth? God. God's truth. Good luck erasing it. You can't. Good luck erasing the words. You can't. It's so miraculous that we still get to see these things, despite this full-on pressure to see that we don't. Hunter Biden is going to be deposed, and in this case, it's not going to be something they can easily hide. And this is the season of depositions for Hunter Biden. And our law system is so corrupted from the DOJ level down that we might get a better, more clear view of Hunter Biden from a civil case where the owner of this computer repair store, John Paul McIsaac, is suing Hunter Biden for defamation, because Hunter Biden, of course, accused him of invasion of privacy and stealing his computer. Well, at the same time, they're trying to say, well, the computer might be Mr. Biden's, but select images on it are not. Some are, some are not. So Margot Cleveland at the Federalist does a great job. She's a law professor, big time award winner as a lawyer and a teacher of law, professor of law. So she has some questions she suggests for the interviewer who's going to be questioning Hunter Biden, such as, on the receipt, is this your signature? Does it look like your signature? Did you have a MacBook? Did it have a Biden Foundation sticker on it? Did it break? Did you ever visit this area of Wilmington? What about this store? Where did you live at the time? If an expert identifies this as your signature, do you have any basis on which to challenge that conclusion? Great attorneys follow the first rule in Black's law of cross-examination. You never ask a question to which you do not have the answer. You are not asking at this point for information. You are building your case. So Hunter Biden will peddle out the, oh, I don't remember, probably to every question. How could I? I was completely stoned. How could I? I was a meth addict. Okay, good luck with that. So he came back. After he dropped off the computer, he came back and dropped off a hard drive and said, you know, all those images, some of which are mine, some of which are not, on that computer that may or may not be mine, and I don't ever remember being here. Would you please take those images and put them on this hard drive? But I won't ever remember I did this because I'm a drug-fueled maniac. So then they come back with the follow-up questions, is what she suggests. So you may have come to this store twice, driving yourself. But you have no recollection because you were too high to remember? Is that your testimony? And you don't remember purchasing a hard drive? And what else they can do here is they can now dig into his finances in some level of granularity. So we may get more from this civil trial than we have gotten from the criminal trial. It's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash on The Dana Show. We'll come back with the quick five. And wouldn't you know, it involves President Trump.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
The Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski. Every day, Chris helps unpack the connection between politics and the economy and how it affects your wallet.
Is America not number one anymore? Sometimes it takes admitting we have a problem to be able to fix it. Between parental rights over their children or the government paying big tech for your private info, how can we right our wrongs to go back to being the shiny city on the hill?
Whether it's happening in D.C. or down on Wall Street, it's affecting you financially. Be informed. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
And in fact, welcome back to it's Todd Herman filling in for Dana, and I do a podcast of my own. I also have a weekend national radio show on this very network, Radio America. It's my podcast. It's 2.5 hours of new material every single weekday. You get it at thetoddhermanshow.com or wherever you get podcasts. The Quick Five lurks around the corner. I'm struggling with the best way to introduce an august and important segment this way as a guest host. So I'm going to try it this way. Now, the Quick Five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is a great idea from President Trump. In fact, later in the show, we're going to talk about another great approach that's being taken from the state in which I live, Idaho. Something very similar to this. President Trump has called for the election of school principals. people should be able to fire them. The president said, I refuse to abandon our public school system to these lunatics because what's happening there is terrible. Now, that's a categorical statement, and I would just say that people who live in red states, please, please put as much effort into supporting and having the six of great teachers who are trying to stand up against this stuff, because they do exist. And if we don't stand up for them, they're going to feel very, very alone, and the struggle sessions will work. And with the teachers who are, in fact, teaching this trash, do a very, very good job of making them live in the world they create for others. And here's what I mean. If you are forced, and you feel forced, to have your kids in these government institutions, or maybe nine-tenths of the school is great, there's just one social justice, you know, perverse teacher, make them, in parent-teacher conferences, answer legitimately intimate sexual questions. I mean it. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm trying to show them. So you sit down in one of these sessions with one of these teachers who's teaching perverse material as a parent-teacher conference, and you say to them, you ask them a very intimate sexual question. Hey, by the way, do you use this or this in your sexual habits? When was the first time you tried X or Y? And you're going to get a shock looked. And your response is, hey, you talk to our kids about this. This is absolutely fair game for me to know. My suggestion, I like President Trump's as well. Other thing that should be done is, of course, all the union stuff should be scraped out of these schools, and school choice is huge. That should be done. The Atlantic has approached the Bernie Sanders level of annoyance in choice. They say there's too much variety at supermarkets. It's overwhelming. They want single option stores. So like mushrooms. So mushrooms are us. In other words, what they want is a world of the airport stores. You ever notice that unless it's a really sophisticated airport, a terrible water. It's always the water you don't want. Like, Danza? What is that water? Not Danza. I met an airport once, by the way. Very, very good guy. But they want that super limited choice thing. Sanders said this about deodorants. No one needs 134 separate choices of deodorants. Well, but then again, some of us use deodorant. Some of us. Since I had a listener to my podcast, remember the podcast family, get really, really upset with me because I described Rachel Levin, the man who pretended woman and is second in charge of Health and Human Services. I described him as a fake woman wearing a fake uniform with fake medals. And this gentleman wrote to me and said, hey, I went to public, but that's not a fake uniform. It's one of the five branches that deserve. I know that Rachel Levin gets himself. And the Admiral has some news for all of us about kids here at number four.
So, you know, let's talk for a moment about the trans health care that our community needs and transgender medicine and gender-affirming care. I mean, that term is important, although our opponents have weaponized it.
Okay, so if I were to go to a doctor and say, I identify as 6'7". Would you go ahead and chop my femurs in half and install, in my case, 6 inches or so of fake bone, maybe from a cadaver, because I'm trans heights. Would that be height-affirming care? It all breaks down. And I'd also note this. The Atlantic is very in favor of the 142 different flavors of gender, but they want single stores. Got it. We figured out what's causing inflation. This is the boss of the European financial system, Christine Lagarde, in clip number 5.
Climate change affects inflation. And inflation is the beast that all central bankers, whether they wear a green jacket or not, want to tame and discipline. Number two, because it affects our balance sheets. Whether it's a $3 trillion or a $7 trillion balance sheet, it is affected by climate change.
Got it. Thank you so much. It's all climate change. Well, good news, actually, I can share with you. Some GOP lawmakers have introduced a bill that would bar the people who run Joe Biden from invoking a national climate emergency. Oh, by the way, coming up, Tony Fauci's got himself a new gig.
When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Todd Herman in for Dana, and I know a lot of you were very concerned about Tony Fauci post-retirement because how's he going to make ends meet? All he had, all he had was the almost half a million a year in salary. Well, and, you know, awards, where he would fund a college or university to do, I don't know, like gain-of-function research that then that university would outsource to the Wuhan lab, which is run by the Chinese Communist Party. So Fauci would stroke a check, give that to the university, and then in a weird turn of events, the university would turn around and give Tony Fauci an award for, you know, creative bookkeeping, something of that sort. Very science-y type stuff. So his all-in paycheck was somewhat larger than half a million a year, plus then the participation in the upside on patents, et cetera, with pharmaceutical companies, speaking fees, book royalties, and then his wife's role, of course, in medical ethics. So I know there was a lot of worry. I want you to be able to relax. Tony Fauci is going to go to Georgetown University, where he will be a professor, but not just a professor, but a distinguished professor. So he'll be teaching important facts of science like this. Remember, if a child almost dies from an injection of an experimental gene sequencing device, wait until the swelling of the heart goes down before you inject him again. So advice like that. And he'll get paid for this, of course. And this matters because the harm that this man has done will not go away. There is a woman from Australia, 37 years old, mother of two. She had been a surfer, a snowboarder, a paddleboarder, a rock climber. And then she decided in a sad, ridiculously foolish event to take this third injection from Pfizer. Now, the sad and ridiculous event is that, of course, based upon the lies of Tony Fauci and Bill Gates and Walensky, Birx, etc., ad nauseum, she was probably forced to do this, definitely mentally conned into it. Her name is Maline Guermont. So now she has not just Guillain-Barr syndrome, which affects the ability to have any sort of facial expressions. She's got 30 separate neurological issues, sclerosis. She can't move her body. She's in a wheelchair. But that's just one person. And this is exactly what the so-called public health officials continue to tell us, that these are rare, that only one or two have been connected to the injections themselves. That is not true. And it's so not true that the agencies that are designed to observe these injuries don't want to know. And when I say that, I mean they have set up systems in place so that they can't know. There is a great Substack journalist who tracks these things and works in the what we call team reality in relation to COVID. Her name is Marianne DeMasi, and she looked into the actual occurrences of serious adverse events with these injections, and she came out with, by crunching the data, a 1 in 556 every 556 people, one has a very serious outcome, which requires hospitalization. Now, the industry has told us, that is the pharma industry, that that's not common, but it's not uncommon. It's sort of in the middle. But wait. So she went to them and said, okay, what are the official rates then? This is how I crunched the numbers. What are the official rates? She asked about 10 agencies, amongst them the deeply corrupt FDA. They don't know. There was not one agency that could say, this is the official data. Not one. There are, though, scientists who actually did this thing called the scientific method, where they had this thesis that, in fact, these injections are causing a great deal of harm. And so then with that thesis, they went about to try to disprove their thesis. And they took two different approaches. One involved autopsies. One didn't involve autopsies, but it involved a very strict examination of death records of people who died 7 days after receiving the injections. And here's what they found. The first study was done in Tokyo, which is, of course, a white supremacist country, so we know that they're lying. The associate director of the Tokyo Medical Examiner's Office led a team of pathologists who conducted 54 autopsies on adults who died within 7 days of receiving the COVID jab. So they went through a pretty strict formulation to see if these were tied together. And here's what they came out with effectively. And Alex Berenson, at his Substack, he crunched the numbers. It's about 1 in 8 post-jab deaths examined were related to the shots, or might be, but it's might be meaning are. Even more striking, though, they found this: myocarditis, likely from the mRNA injections, as the underlying cause of death in 2 out of 3 deaths under the age of 40. As you listen to this, remember what Fauci's going to be doing. As you listen to this, remember that they're obsessed with putting mRNA injections into meat. Remember this as we talk through this, that they're obsessed with making flu shots mRNA, that they want every medicine to be mRNA. They want this code in our body. Second study was done out of Qatar, and they looked at the death records of 138 people who died within 30 days of the COVID injection, and their criteria was extremely strict, including only deaths within 15 days of the so-called vaccination. They classified 23 of the deaths as having a high or intermediate probability of being caused by the injections, so let's boil that down, and Berenson does this math as well. 1 in 100,000 people risk suddenly dying by being injected. That is one way to view the numbers. Here's another. Remove kids from this. Why? Because kids are not at risk from the virus. They should never be injected. Remove 18 to 24-year-olds. Why? Because they're not at any material risk from the virus. They should be rejected as candidates for the virus. Remove from this people who had the who had COVID-19 and recovered. They should never have been injected. And you take a pool of people who could somehow benefit from these injections, which I don't think there's any, but to be kind, you end up now with more like 10 in 100,000, if you look at the numbers that way. And there are people responding to this. Over 300 Canadian soldiers have launched a $500 million lawsuit against the Canadian military for forcing them to get injected or for firing them for refusing to get injected. Guys, it's just a fill-in host for Dan in saying this. But here's where I stand on this. One of my number one litmus tests for office holders is, do you understand that the pharmaceutical companies hate us? That all of this was foreseeable. How do I know that? Because it was foreseen. Who foresaw it? People who actually are immunologists and vaccinologists and looked at the structure of this gene sequencing garbage and said, that's going to kill people, and here's how. And they said it will be myocarditis. They said it will be cancers. How did they know that? Because of the molecular structure of this nonsense and what it cons our bodies into making. In the Senate, there's one guy who is, in my judgment, utterly heroic on this front, and his name is Senator Ron Johnson. Senator Johnson's staff reached out to me. I had a woman on our podcast. We were blessed to tell her story for one of the first times. Her husband was killed, absolutely, in my judgment, negligent homicide, if not murder, by the COVID hospital protocols. Why would I say murder? Because Stacey asked the medical people, do you think anything you're doing is going to help my husband? And they said, no, we know that this isn't going to do anything to help him. We know this could probably kill him. But this is all we're allowed to do. In other words, knowledge of foresight. Senator Ron Johnson's staff heard that cast and reached out to me and said, could you please put us in touch with Stacy? And I did, and they have talked, and they are still talking. He takes this stuff seriously. He was on Fox and Friends, and this is an audio medium, so it's hard to convey to you the shock and worry and panic on the faces of the hosts of Fox and Friends, but it was there. Senator Ron Johnson talks about the so-called public health officials being in denial in clip number 6.
Nobody will admit they were wrong because the body count is way too high. They sabotaged early treatment. They completely mishandled the pandemic response. We shut down schools. Sweden didn't. Not a child in Sweden died. You actually have lower infection rates when you're around kids, we're starting to find out. So, I mean, through the hubris, through just the arrogance of people like Fauci and people that were in charge of our response, we completely mishandled this. And nobody at this point in time will admit they're wrong. And quite honestly, people who got the vaccine also don't really want to know that there may be some real issues here. So we are in a complete state of denial. But people have to start facing reality, and that starts with the federal health officials, which they are not doing. I've written close to 50 oversight letters, and I've basically gotten the back in the hand of people like Walensky and other federal health officials. Transparency, honesty has to begin sooner rather than later.
So we began this program, and you may have missed this at the top of Dana's show, by saying, why are we in the position of having to ask to see these records? Every drop of research should be stored in the cloud. It's ours. We should be able to look at it anytime we want to. It belongs to us. Any emails between Fauci and his team on anything belong to us. If they want to make some argument that you don't get to see this particular email, they have to say why. And if we sue and get access to that email and they lied about what was in it, well, then they should go to jail. We have got to recognize the fact that they pulled this sleight of hand where we're to pretend that we need to go plate in hand on our knees. Please, mister, may I see the emails? No, we need to be going to them and saying they're ours. We'll look at them whenever we like. Costco, you know, they went pretty woke on some things. And with election integrity coming back into the news, and it is coming back into the news, it's fantastic to see Costco is now taking a different stance on ID. That next in The Dana Show, Todd Herman filling in.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download The Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on The Dana Show.
And that is an important perspective, obviously, as fans of Dana's show. Also, if you don't have the newsletter, go to danalash.com and sign up for Chapter and Verse. And it's her writing, and just a different way to get Dana's point of view. Mentioned before the break, if you missed this, that's, you know, there, election integrity is going to continue to be an issue. There is yet another piece that's come out of Arizona where a Democrat made the same claims, the same sorts of claims that Carrie Lake has made about the manipulation of the voting system. So we may delve into that tomorrow. That it has to continue to be a topic, because while our voting system is set up in a way that encourages fraud, there are people like me who are going to go, that's a bad idea. We should actually be able to have a baseline for safety and security of elections. That would involve things like, number one, are the people who are voting, are they legally allowed to vote? That would involve number two, who are they? That would involve number three, confirm they are who they say they are, which would involve number four, check their signatures, which would involve, you got to do this other than in mail. So I was really refreshed to see what I thought was Costco, which has become a super woke company, getting it straight on ID, and then I got it talking to. Because the producer of this program, Valen, got in my ear and said, Todd, you completely misread that article. Totally misread it. No, Costco's not talking about voter ID. They're cracking down on checking people's membership cards. Because apparently people are going into Costco and buying this stuff at the wholesale discount or whatever they offer, and not presenting cards. So now everybody has to show their cards. Doesn't this mean, though, that you would want them to do the same thing in showing that they vote? And I'm going to guess, something's going to cause me to guess that the family who runs Costco to this day, that the Brotmans, they don't want that to happen. Now, what's the difference? It's their ox potentially being gored is the clear difference. And so much of this is knowable for anybody who deals in the realm of data. Anybody. Just like the special treatment of the Biden crime family is knowable to anyone who works in finance or law who chooses to know this. Representative Byron Donalds just goes through in 60 seconds an effective rhetorical prosecution of the Biden crime family here in clip number three.
I don't even know what he's talking about. Much ado about nothing. We've already proven that the Biden family set up multiple accounts, multiple LLCs to funnel money through, to conceal money. You got Hunter Biden pleading guilty to a misdemeanor tax evasion issue, two of them, when in reality is most Americans would actually be charged with felony counts of tax evasion. You have the WhatsApp conversation where Hunter Biden is saying, I'm sitting next to my daddy and we want our money, Henry Zhao. You better give it up. You have the confidential FBI informant who's basically saying that Joe Biden took $5 million from Burisma to shut down the prosecutor in Ukraine. And oh, by the way, Joe Biden brags that he shut down the prosecutor in Ukraine. And then you have, in my view, the final thing. Every member of the Biden family is getting money. There is accounts all over the place. There's money going all over the place.
They're so talented,
but there's much to do
though.
About nothing. Come on.
That's a great line from Laura Ingraham. They're so talented. We're going to spend some time on this tomorrow because there is a key phrase in these discussions from Hunter Biden to this. And look, I just say that if you're a company operating in China, you have permission of the Chinese Communist Party. You wouldn't be operating. So just like America, big companies are government and government is big companies. Same thing is true in China. In fact, they sort of thought of that whole approach to fascism. There's this key phrase, and the more you listen to this and study it, the key phrases stand out more and more often. One of them is Hunter Biden talking about, all too often people mistake my kindness for weakness, and I find myself standing over them saying, I tried to warn you. That's very much like mob talk. Number two is this, and we'll delve into this tomorrow. Hunter Biden said that the Bidens are the very, very best at doing what the chairman wants. Well, the chairman, okay, is that the chairman of a so-called company in China, or is that the chairman of the Chinese Communist Party? And this goes to the heart of the investigation that we should be having, which is, what does the chairman want? Is that being carried out today? And what is it that the Bidens are very, very good at doing? Or no, not very, very good, but the best at doing? What are the deliverables? Until that is answered, we are a compromised nation. Until that is answered, we're a nation at insane national security risk. And the fact that there is not a scramble all Republicans towards this move to get these answers, and I mean almost at the cost of everything else. You could say this is political or we're going to take a political scalp. I would also say this. You think that the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have other pieces of this across the many states? You think that Gavin Newsom wouldn't line up for some Chinese money? Or the so-called governor of Oregon, Kate Brown? Or the so-called governor, I consider him a dictator of the separate country of Washington, Jay Inslee. Remember, he shut the highways down to let the dictator of China drive around his Seattle area. He shut them down for the dictator. So let's not pretend that the money's not been spread around. I'm happy to say that the GOP in my state of Idaho has passed a resolution. And I know it's just a resolution, but it says something, and it's about the FBI. We'll talk about that as we continue and why I think that's a good idea and how to spread this idea around. Plus, RFK Jr., I don't think I can vote for a Kennedy. Could you? He's winning in some ways, and it is frightening to the people who run Joe Biden. Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show. Today is a day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. Thank you for accepting a rank amateur filling in for Dana on The Dana Show. She has her chapter and verse newsletter. You can get it at danalash.com, another way to stay in touch. I live in North Idaho, and it's a very, very different place from any blue city. And just some quick ways to boil this down and why it matters is that the Idaho GOP has done something that I think is something that other states should do, and not just on a political sense, but in a legal sense. And I'm going to make an effort here to explain how some of the pieces have come together in fallen states. So Washington is a fallen state, and after 15 years and 16 years of trying to talk my wife into leaving that state, we finally moved back to a place where I grew up in eastern Washington, North Idaho. In this case, Idaho, because Washington is the fallen state. So I'll start with a comparison of how different it is in states like this. And maybe you live in a red state. During the height of the madness of pretending that we were dealing with the Walking Dead in the COVID-19 scam, I mean, there's probably a virus, but we actually don't know. There's probably one, and it's probably man-made. And we know that it has a very low death rate. Idaho locked down for about, North Idaho, for about 8 days. Some places stayed closed because they bought into the panic for a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But actual, most places here just said, no, we're not going to do that. And the governor, Brad Little, is happy to take pharma money and CDC money and FDA money. And he's into that whole grift. So he kind of tried to enforce it. But I'll give you a case in point of, I was at my very favorite restaurant in the area. We actually do have restaurants up in the mountains, incidentally. And a public health official from Boise came in, a state official. And he started to hassle the young people who run this place. And I know a lot of the young people who work there, and they're great people. And they're solid, solid kids. And he was hassling them. He demanded to talk to the owners. No one's wearing masks. And the young people kept saying, you know, sir, it's our understanding that this in Kootenai County is a suggestion. It is not a requirement. And he was hot. And as this went on, an elected official, a sheriff, got up and invited the guy to leave. Well, it didn't really just invite him to leave. It pointed out to him, I could have your car towed. Get out. Quit hassling these kids. Very, very different. And very welcome. So the Idaho GOP voted unanimously to condemn the FBI calls for abolition of a corrupt government agency. Okay, it has no teeth. It's just a political party making noise. It's a fundraising thing. It's all of that. And it's also a very, very important statement, a reminder of the purpose of the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. We are a union of states. We are not a homogeneous body run by the top, right? We're not a unibrain. We're not the Borg. States exist for a reason. And the reason that I mentioned the pieces kind of coming together and why I told you about that sheriff is this. In the separate countries, there is a distinct effort underway, and they're trying to expand it to do away with the elected sheriff position. They succeeded in doing this in the separate country of Washington, in King County. That's the county in which the madhouse of Seattle resides. So King County residents voted themselves out of the business of voting for the top law enforcement official. That person is now appointed by the single most corrupt person in that county, a guy named Smack Daddy Dal Constantine. That model, they're trying to bring that to North Idaho. They're trying to bring this to other red states to do away with the elected sheriff position. And they describe this in such a bizarre sense that this will give people more control. Because now the sheriff will be reporting to an elected official. No, the sheriff is an elected official. So if you watch these pieces come together and you understand that there's steps ahead on, hey, let's make sure that a local sheriff who does have the ability to say, leave my county, is the top elected official, that there can be no teeth to something like this if the state legislature decided to say to FBI agents in Idaho, hey, you can't operate here. You got to come for our permission. And I know that there'd be a constitutional battle over that, but this is where we stand in this nation, that we need to start to press the gas on the 10th Amendment and that form of pseudo-autonomy, because the top-down model is so very clear what they want to do. Robert F. Kennedy is experiencing this. So it is the height. If anyone needs a prime example of the participatory media, not just beyond bias, but into election rigging, Kennedy's running for president again, and there is a unanimous decision to give him no airtime unless it's to pretend that he's a lunatic. Now, I can't vote for RFK in all likelihood. Number one, because he has said that people who leaders who do not believe that the world is melting from the climate should be put in prison. I can't vote for that. Right? He said that the NRA is just as responsible for shooting kids in mass shootings as are the actual shooters. I can't vote for that. What I could do is beg President Trump or President DeSantis to appoint RFK Jr. to run all federal healthcare agencies, and in so doing, to dismantle all federal healthcare agencies, to rebuild them into nothing more than bodies who monitor for health emergencies. So he's polling at 20%, despite the fact that they can't get any decent attention, even interest, even a conversation, really, from the Mockingbird media. You'll hear him discuss this in audio clip number 7.
People watching this campaign are thinking that we probably have $100 million in the bank, because I've now got 20% in the polls in the Democratic primaries against President Biden, and I have the strongest favorability ratings of either President Biden or President Trump in a general election. So when we have to make our filing on July 1st with the Federal Election Commission, people are going to be surprised that we have raised less than $4 million. I've spent practically every moment since this campaign started, not on fundraising, but on getting my message out to the people. And I have to say that in the process of that, I've alienated probably every big money donor in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. So I'm not going to be getting any money from those guys. I need some money from you. We're not spending your money on expensive consultants or glossy TV commercials. We're doing this on a busman's budget. But with that, we have a 50-state organization. We're blowing up social media. We're really performing very well on the podcast, and we've made that $4 million perform like $400 million. I hope that you also have an assurance that when I get to the White House, I'm going to spend your money wisely as well.
It's a great way to do the approach, and I'm just a Kennedy, and I don't know how true that is, that he's lost all the family fortune. He's absolutely right in that he's alienated the big donors. This is a question that has to be operative in any one of these circumstances, and the question goes like this. Ask yourself who's in charge. Who's running things? In the case where the sheriff confronted the technocrats in the restaurant in North Idaho, the sheriff showed to the technocrat, I'm actually running things. That's if you have questions, try me again. And when I tow your car and impound it, you'll find out who runs things here. In the case of the Democrat Party, who runs things? Well, there's a couple organizations. One is pharma. You're not allowed to criticize them. This turning, people will say conservatives have turned. All of a sudden, we're against big business. No. All of a sudden, we're saying Pfizer's not a business, it's a country. Moderna's not a business, it's a country. It's an operating part of the U.S. government. So we haven't changed. They're not allowed to criticize those people, therefore those people are in charge. The axiom is, if you ever wonder who's in charge, determine who you're not allowed to criticize. And of course, then the sexual left is also in charge of the Democrat Party. You're not allowed to criticize them at all. And this, on the technocrat front, goes to such bizarre extremes that this guy, Peter Hotez, he is the technocrat who refused to have this debate with RFK Jr. on the podcast of Joe Rogan, the largest podcast platform or show in the world, 11 million downloads. I think it's 11 million people, not just downloads. I think it's 11 million people. That's a huge audience, obviously. He wouldn't do that because RFK Jr.'s not a, quote, scientist. Well, scientists step up to say, I'm a scientist. I'll debate you. And a lot of them are on team reality with the COVID and will go, hey, you know what? I've got the same medical degrees you do and probably better. So how about us? No, I'm not going to do that. Turns out that a lot of his research is tied to, guess where? The Wuhan Institute of Virology and the Chinese Communist Party. Would that be a reason he doesn't want to debate? And I don't know if you've tracked this, but that whole word debate, just like everything else the left touches, they're destroying the word debate. At high school debates and other debates now, you can lose based upon your position. So the judges are supposed to track and measure how well you defend your position. Do you use any logical fallacies? No, then that's a point on your behalf. Do you use ad hominem attacks? No, then that's a point on your behalf. Is it a well-structured argument, etc.? Does it stand up to scrutiny? Do you have pointed questions that deduct from the logical reasoning of the debate partner? Then that's on your behalf, and it's deducted from them. Not just that, but if you have the wrong opinion, you can lose. But it gets worse. If you ever said anything on social media that the debate moderators and judges don't like, they'll have you lose the debate, even if you won the debate. So action to kids who are in debates with parents who sponsor that, if these are the rules, say so at the beginning of the debate. I am not allowed to state my opinion because if I do, I will lose. That's how this debate is structured. In other words, there is no debate. We'll come back with the quick five. Oregon, a revolution of sorts for annoyance, getting away with an annoyance. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Really fun to fill in for Dana. Appreciate you having me. It's Todd Herman. You can get me at thetoddhermanshow.com. And they got a podcast. It's about 2.5 hours of new material every weekday. It is God at the center and conservative politics at the edges. It's a decision I made to function that way after I left radio for the second time. And here I am back. Also have a national show on this network, Radio America. So thank you to Radio America and Dana for having me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Quick Five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You ever been to one of these states where they have make work provisions? Do you know, I mean, obviously, you know what a make work provision is. You've probably seen make work positions. When the automobile came out, there were states and municipalities that said that you had to have people walk in front of you with lanterns. And that was because there were no headlights. So that was a make work provision. There was also this, and I thought this was a myth until I looked into it. When buggies were going away because of the onslaught of the horrible literal Nazi internal combustion engines, there were compulsory sales of buggy whips. And they've done this in many, many states, right? If you buy this, you have to buy that. In the state of Oregon is one of the last states, and they're promising to do this. It's not even done yet. Oh, no, it's done. Oh, pardon me, it is done. They've ended their 72-year ban on pumping your own gasoline. And they took this stuff seriously. I remember as a kid, the first time I drove through Oregon was with a friend of mine. We went down to see the Oregon beaches. And I think I was 17 and got out to pump gas and put the nozzle in the car. And the guy flipped. I mean, sprinted out of his little shack and, "What are you doing? I'm pumping gas. You're not allowed to do that." Pushes me back. I could kill a guy? What is this? We do this in our own state. So that's gone. And it's good thinking. And maybe they should have taken more naps. Oh, no, that's called a transition. That's how we professional radio hosts do things. It's called a transition. It turns out that if you want to have a healthy brain, in fact, not just healthy, but if you want to have a large brain, one of the things you could do is get injected with mRNA, and that'll puff up your brain, but it might explode and get an aneurysm. That's one way to do it. A better way to do it is to take daytime naps. Now, I don't know if you are like me, but there is something about falling asleep when you're tired. You know, there's the purposeful you go to sleep. It's bedtime. I got to get up early, and you lay down and you're purpose driven. I'm going to sleep. There is something remarkable about, I am tired and I'm going to let myself fall asleep. Is that not just the most magic feeling? And a half hour sleep resets the brain. Here's a little tip from a guy who takes daytime naps. Drink a 5-hour energy just before you take the nap. It's remarkable the way the caffeine is set to go when you wake up. And by the way, it doesn't interrupt the sleep. Anheuser-Busch, the Budweiser people, they put out this new ad. It's the Bud Light Night. Oh, no doubt I'm back. They've also fired all the people responsible for the Dylan Mulvaney disaster. And then they decided, hey, why don't we sponsor a pride parade where adults parade around naked in front of kids. I still don't think Bud Light gets the memo, do you? Roseanne Barr has made a fascinating decision, having now re-entered the world of media after she said something for which I don't know that she should have been canceled. Now she has said that nobody died in the Holocaust. No. People, in fact, died in the Holocaust. The word Holocaust, in fact, means the mass murder of people. So they did, in fact, die. I think that she is probably, and I think it was Kane who pointed this out, she may have recanceled herself. The oldest known engravings of dead people, done by dead people, not by, they weren't dead when they did them, have been discovered in a cave 57,000 years old, they say. I'll be interested to have the dating method on that. And the engravings mean something. It means that we've always wanted to be able to communicate with one another. That this has been implanted into as something we need as human beings. And also an ability we have above animals. Thank you, God, for that. We come back. Jim Garrity, National Review, truly does not understand why some people say it's Trump or no one. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on The Dana Show.
Hey, it's Todd Herman filling in for Dana on The Dana Show. And there is a joke I heard, and it's actually from a religious radio show. And I do listen to those because I'm an evangelical Christian. And it explains to Jim Garrity, who I have to believe, I've met Garrity once, had a conversation or two with him. Really personable, nice man, works at the National Review, writes at the National Review. And I think this could explain to him a little bit of what's wrong with his analysis in regard to the GOP and voters who want Trump or don't want Trump. Now, in his analysis, he doesn't say that he doesn't understand why people want Trump. He probably does understand it to some degree, but I don't think in any actual similarity to those of us who live in flyover country, and the majority of us do live in flyover country. So the joke goes like this, and anyone who lives in flyover country or works in ranching country or farming country, you're going to know it's not really a joke. It's just a funny way to say something that happens here. So there's a guy, he's a farmer, rancher, he's on his land, and up rolls a shiny SUV, comes bouncing up the road, and guy pops out the door. He's got himself a clipboard and wearing a suit and tie. He's got a name tag and a necklace, a placard around his neck. And I'm with the federal government. I'm here to check your land, look at the drainage, etc., to make sure it's on point. And farmer says, "Okay, you have some kind of warrant? Don't need one. Just here to look at the water drainage. Don't need a warrant for that. It's not a criminal case, but I could make it one." And farmer rancher figures out, okay. He says, "All right, do what you need to do. Just don't go over in that field." The guy says, "You hear me? I'm with the federal government." Pulls out a badge. Bureaucrat's badge. "See that? Okay, that's a badge. I'm going into that field." So he walks off. And in a few minutes, he's screaming at the top of his lungs, yelling, "Help me, help me, help me," as he's being chased out of the field by a huge bull. And the farmer, shocked and concerned, yells to help the guy, "Show him your badge! Show him your badge!" Wouldn't work. We have these experiences here, and this is what I beg the Jim Garrity's of the world to understand. You guys lost the election with President Trump 30 years ago. When you failed to contain the administrative state at the get-go, you lost. When you failed to build a wall, you lost. When you started to take orders from the Chamber of Commerce and the CEO roundtable, you lost. When you paid more attention to what the shiny-shoed donors want, you lost. When you didn't take track of the fact that people like us do not revere these institutions and haven't for a long, long time, you lost. We stopped revering these institutions when we started to see utter madness. For instance, the declaration that if our tractors leave impressions in the ground, and they do, and you run a tractor across farmlands, and the farmland is then later filled with water, and it will be because rain happens, and you have someone from the federal government come up and say, you see this line of water here that goes right over to there? You mean where my tractor left an indentation in the dirt that's filled with water? Yes, that is now a navigable waterway, and we are now taking over this land. You can't build here. You can't do any improvements here. We're seizing it and taking it over, but you still have to pay the property taxes. You lost when you didn't come about and say, no, are you kidding me? No, you're all fired. Anybody who ever did this, Navy Corps of Engineers or anyone else, no, you're fired. So in his analysis, what he's saying is that if this election is, if President Trump is the nominee, the election will be a referendum on Trump, not on Biden. And he backs this up with some data. And in his data, he shows that people on whole are more concerned about Biden's mental fitness and physical fitness to serve than President Trump's. People are slightly more concerned about Trump being president for 4 years than Biden, but the numbers are disparate in terms of the concern about Biden's mental health versus Trump's, and they're much, much worse for Biden because people understand that he's a demented old man. So his point in his piece, as I understand his piece, is those numbers show that the electorate, he calls it, the electorate, is demanding a choice other than Trump, the electorate. And here's where we go, Jim. There is no such thing as the electorate. People who live in Washington, D.C. live in a country completely separate from those of us in flyover country. In fact, we're seen as zoo animals. And I'll give you a case in point. In President Trump saying what you're about to hear him say, he takes on the language of people who've been saying this for 4 years. There are those of us who have been using this phraseology for 4 years. Why? Because we've seen this madness. And what President Trump here says, what he says, and how he formulates this statement, whether you believe he's going to do this or not, the way he formulates this statement maps to those of us who no longer revere these institutions the way people in Washington, D.C. revere these institutions. And there's a reason for that. We revere different institutions. This is President Trump refusing to speak the language of his enemy and instead calling an assault on children what it is here in clip number 8.
I will immediately sign a new executive order to cut federal funding for any school pushing critical race theory, transgender insanity, and other inappropriate racial, sexual, or political content on our children. As I said, I will keep men out of women's sports, and I will sign a law prohibiting child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. Can you believe that? Now, can you believe you have to say that? I'm going to sign a law to prohibit child sexual mutilation.
That language is not polite, and yet it's accurate. You go talk to young people who've had this done to themselves at the age of 13 or 14, and you're going to discover there are people like us for the past 8 years screaming into the wind saying, why are you doing this to kids? And you had people in Republican power circles who said, oh, that's not happening. And then when we said, no, here's where it's happening. Oh, I'm not ready to confront that. And when this all began out of the separate country of Washington State, where they started letting men shower with little girls, that's where that happened. And I started to bring this up to Republicans in power circles. I had a national radio host tell me, and very, very, very recognizable name, trust me. Nice man. And I hold him in personal high regard as a human being. But on that decision, he was so frightfully wrong. There was a simple petition saying, no, we want this on the ballot. We don't want this forced down on us. And that radio host told me, I'm not ready to take a position on this yet. And yes, I'm tying that back to Jim Garrity because that host runs in the Garrity circles. You lost this stuff when you failed to rush into the fire. You lost this stuff when you failed to go at the ATF the first 1,000 times they violated our rights. So when President Trump came down the escalator and he said, I'm going to build a wall, it's going to be the most gorgeous wall in very Trumpian language, he won at that time. Why? Because he said the thing you're not to say. Because the CEO roundtable in the Chamber of Commerce said you're not to say this. So people who live in D.C., they revere the institutions because they love the people who work in the institutions. Because these are their friends. Because this is their norm. That's not our norm. People in small communities, and people in rural communities, we don't revere necessarily institutions, but we have a closeness to the institutions that serve our area. And if they don't, we can go direct to the people who run them and say, you're not serving our area. D.C. is the only city in the country that has the following business model. If we want more money, we take it. It's the only city that cannot have a recession or a depression. The only way D.C. faces pain is if the pain in this country gets so large, so profound, that enough people say, that's it, it's inexorably broken, scrap it. And guess what? That's what's being done. That's what's being done in the cities. That's the design in these attacks of these cities. So all the politeness, all the shining of the shoes, all of the glad handing with donors, all of that, you lost this years ago. And I can prove the point that there were those of us who saw this, but only outsiders could see it. When I was at the Republican National Committee as the chief digital strategist, one of the things I wrote when I left was a warning to the committee. And it was this. You're going to have a time where a celebrity announces a run for president and the celebrity doesn't use you. In fact, the celebrity speaks about how corrupt he views you to be. He's going to run based upon a single core issue. I have the paper that I sent them. It's called The RNC in the Era of Choice. It's laughed at. Now, people can't win an election without us. We have all the infrastructure. And I said at the time, guys, the cost of the infrastructure is plummeting every day. The value of our voter database is plummeting every day because the sort of hardcore old static data that we have, the reason I spent so much money to make it live data is because I know that static data is going away as a valuable resource. They couldn't see it. Now, I thought, and I'd used the example of a Chuck Norris or someone like that. I didn't know it was going to be Donald John Trump, but I knew that they had lost because they wouldn't stand on the third rails. They wouldn't talk about the so-called social issues, and there's no such thing as a social issue. You try having a conservative country where people can't agree that a man is not a woman. They wouldn't talk about build a wall. We had to cajole them and push them into even saying the phrase, fire Nancy Pelosi. Well, I don't want to target an individual. Oh, okay. So you choose to lose. People want President Trump for those reasons because they do not feel ignored by him. He does not revere the institutions. And for whatever reason, President Trump has a unique gift to connect with people. And I don't think he's got a lot of similarities with us. I don't think he's got a lot of common with us, except for that heart. And maybe it's a negative. Maybe it's the cynicism. Maybe it's a determination to fix things, but that's what people see in this man. And Jim Garrity, I hope you'll grow to understand that. We'll come back with Florida Man on also, though, an amazing story about the Menendez trial. I was unaware of this, and I feel deeply, deeply guilty for not knowing this. And if you don't know about it, don't worry, we'll tell you. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Hey, it's Todd Herman for Dana. It is time for Florida Man. And there's a guy decided to go onto a beach and in front of children, decided to commit some lewd acts. He's been arrested for that. He's taken to the Volusia County Jail. If you performed a sex act on a beach, according to the sheriff's office there, they arrested Nolan Hernandez, who's 26 years old. And this was near Granada. The Granada Approach in Ormond Beach. Not that anywhere that is, but this is what it says in the article. And it was in front of several young teens that he decided to do this. I don't think I want to get into the details of the actual sex act, but I would say this. How do they know that this is not just him being himself, that he was born this way? How do they know that maybe this was a class? Maybe this was a sex ed class. And he's simply demonstrating to kids how to do this because that's the state of things in this country. Now, obviously, in Florida, they don't put up with that, and good for them. There is new information coming out about a trial that you might remember, the Menendez brothers trial. Do you remember this? This was back in 1996. These two young men shot and killed their parents, and it looked like cold-blooded murder. And they'd said that they were abused, and they'd been sexually abused their whole life. And their dad was a bigwig in entertainment. And it turns out in a new documentary that there's something to this. And apparently, like everybody knew about Harvey Weinstein, A lot of people apparently knew about the Menendez family, particularly Rosie O'Donnell. And she talks about a letter she received from the Menendez brothers here in clip 9A.
I got a little story to tell. In 1996, Lyle sent me a letter, basically said, I know you know, and I hoped we could connect. And, you know, he was right. I did know that they were innocent. I did know that those were boys who had been incested. And why I knew and how I knew, Lyle also knew.
So she knew but didn't say anything. And she kind of explains why she, in her mind, didn't say anything. Now, to me, this is unconscionable that you don't say something. But then again, it's Hollywood. And this guy was very, very powerful, this father. So Rosie O'Donnell talked about knowing the Menendez brothers knew they were sexually assaulted in clip 9B.
I didn't write him back because I felt afraid and I wasn't ready to touch the subject. And, you know, it was 1996. So now I see the new documentary where Roy Rosella from Menudo said that he, too, was sexually abused and raped by Jose Menendez. And that he bled rectally afterward. You know, in 96, you know, in the late 80s, people weren't ready to accept the fact that boys, too, get raped, sometimes by their fathers.
Well, I don't know that we're ever ready to accept that. It is a reality. It's a sad reality. It's a sin problem, and it's a profoundly disturbing sin problem. Hollywood is the land of sin problems. If you've never spent any time in Hollywood, I will tell you it is thick with sin problems. And I guess the rest of the country is too, but there's a sort of unique. And it's thick with sexual sin problems. I gave a speech once for Microsoft, and afterwards, this was at an event down at the beach, expensive hotel, and afterwards, a beautiful young woman came up to me, unbelievably stunning, and handed me her business card, and she said, I work with three other former Playboy Playmates, and we will do anything to have a deal with Microsoft. And she grabbed both of my hands and she said, and Todd, I mean anything. Thick with this. These are strong temptations. And of course, being sort of an atheistic society, what would be the limit? So Rosie O'Donnell addresses the fact that the rumor was at the time, or the position was, that these boys, the Menendez brothers, killed their parents to get at their money. She talks about this in clip 9C.
And as a culture, we ridiculed them. Jokes about them on Saturday Night Live, jokes from Jay Leno every night. Everyone thought this was a funny target. Two kids who had been molested since the age of preschool, fighting back and standing up, and people thought they just wanted the money. They had the money. They didn't need the money. Money was not what it was about. So now it's 30 years later. I see the documentary and I leave a little TikTok and I get a phone call. It's Lyle's wife, Rebecca, and she wants to know if it would be okay if he called me. And I said yes. And he did. And we have been talking and sharing and becoming very close. And his wife is amazing, a 25-year relationship that they kept open and growing and thriving in those horrific circumstances.
So she is of the mind that the Menendez brothers should be set free. And she sounds like she is repentant for having not said anything, which brings us to the point, really. If you know something about like this stuff, or you know something of the kid being abused, it is incumbent upon us to say something. Otherwise, we actually join into the abuse. We sponsor it. You're actually affirming it by not saying anything. Even if you sense things, I'm not saying go turn in your friends because you sense things. If you sense things, do some light investigation and figure it out. But if you know things, you have to speak. We'll come back on Dana's show, Todd Herman filling in. Who is, in your mind, the single most powerful group in the United States of America? Who is it? And how would you prove that, go about making that case? I think I can make the case that it might not be who we think it is. Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show. Today is the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. What a pleasure to fill in for Dana this week. What a great show she's put together and fantastic team. Thank you to Valen and Radio America for making this possible for me. My name is Todd Herman. You probably recognize my voice from talk radio, filling in for over 100 times for the Maha, El Rushboth. God rest you, Rush. Thank you for everything you did for my career. Question for you is, what is the most powerful group in America? Now, you could have a lot to choose from because we have intelligence services that have imparted to themselves the right, as they see it, to not just monitor our speech, but to police it, to disappear it, to punish speech. We know about this case. This guy called himself Ricky Vaughn on Twitter. I'm forgetting his real name, but he's facing prison time for posting a meme. And he was actually tried prosecuted under laws designed to prosecute people who beat up black Americans trying to get to the polls or who threatened to beat them up. Stochastic terrorism, it's called. And he may well go to prison. And by the way, he's not the only one. There is now, believe it or not, a group of black people, leftists, who are facing a similar fate for posting memes. So you could say, okay, so the intelligence services are monitoring us. They're policing our speech. You have courts and DOJ that they're policing our speech and, in fact, doing so at the point of putting people in prison. You could point to what happened in January 6th and say, okay, we have people who simply walked on the lawn of the Capitol who've been put through the process as the punishment. In other words, we're going to make you defend yourself at the cost of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from something as simple as walking on the lawn of a building you actually own part of as a U.S. citizen. So you could say, okay, so they're the most powerful. Or you could say, well, we've got the Mockingbird media. And the Mockingbird media succeeded in making President Trump into this great, great danger to the world. And he's literally Hitler, and he's literally Mao, and he's literally Stalin, all rolled into this one man, this one orange man. So you could say, okay, it's the Mockingbird media. They're clearly the most powerful. Okay, but who is actually the most powerful? You could say it's pharma. You could say, look, you had pharma demand and get the right to shoot people up against their will with an injection they don't want, and that many of us knew was harmful, and some of us, at great cost, decided to refuse to take it. And some of us walked away from jobs for that. Some of us are still looking for jobs, having walked away. So you could make that case, that that's the most powerful group. But let's look at the very, very center of this. This is a so-called pastor. And she is making a statement here about God, and she's doing this on behalf of the group I contend has been made temporarily the most powerful group on earth. Here, audio clip number 10.
I invite you to rise in body or spirit, and let us confess our faith today in the words of the Sparkle Creed. I believe in the non-binary God, whose pronouns are plural. I believe in Jesus Christ, their child, who wore a fabulous tunic and had two dads, and saw everyone as a sibling child of God. I believe in the rainbow spirit, who shatters our image of one white light and refracts it into a rainbow of gorgeous diversity.
Okay, so this is a woman who contends to believe in Jesus Christ, and I would just say, so do the demons. You know who else believes in Jesus? The devil. And in her very statement there, that Sparkle Creed, you take what God said the first time he announced himself, I am. I am, not we are. I am. First time he announced when Moses said, what shall I call you? I am. I am that I am. Single. It's not a plural pronoun. Now, anyone who's biblically conversant knows this, but these are people now who are literally succeeding at fooling people, conning people into believing that this is somehow relational to worshiping the Lord Jesus. And by the same token, you have 22 elected Democrats who are putting out statements like this. This is from Rose DeLaura. I am Catholic, baptized, raised, and confirmed. The fundamental tenets of my faith compel me to defend a woman's right to access abortion. I'm proudly part of the faithful large majority of U.S. Catholics who support legal protections for abortion access. Read my statement. My friend Chris Bray, brilliant, unbelievably brilliant Substack writer, well, not just Substack writer, writer, points out that the very tenets of the Catholic faith belie all of this. Human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception. From the first moment of his existence, a human being must be recognized as having the rights of a person. And you could continue on. This is all the written rules of the Catholic Church. Now, the Catholic Church should kick people like this out. I'm not saying that she's a Catholic. I'm saying that that politician is a professing Catholic. Joe Biden is. The Catholic Church is duty-bound to remove these people from their church publicly and forever to announce, no, you aren't the least bit Catholic. The most powerful group in America is the sexual left. They've been made temporarily this. They're erecting churches that are pretend Christian churches that are in fact teaching soft Satanism. Soft in that people don't know that's what they're doing, but that's what they're doing. They've gained access to our children. And this is phenomenal. This is CBS News. And they're making a claim here about LGB so-called T and Q people and what they're having to do in audio clip number 11.
In Peoria, Illinois, and she's not alone, many LGBTQ and people of color statistically less likely to own homes because of discrimination and wealth gaps are moving here. At first, they came from places like New York and Seattle, where home prices are sky high. Now, many are coming from some of the 21 states that have recently passed anti-LGBTQ legislation. Last year, realtor Mike Van Cleve sold almost 80 homes, nearly a third of them to out-of-staters chasing a dream that started on TikTok.
I'm not a realtor, but I live in super affordable Peoria, Illinois, and I think you should live here too.
Not a realtor, Angie Ostrashevsky says she has single-handedly grown Peoria's population by about 360 in 3 years.
When I first started making TikToks about Peoria, it was about improve your quality of life. But in the last 6 months, people are relocating here more for survival. And that's such a different conversation.
There it is, for survival. So they lead into this making the case that same-sex attracted couples have less money than the rest of us, which is statistically easily disproven. But when you're talking about the most powerful group of people in America, why disprove it? And now it's for survival. They're not being killed at all. In fact, you can, in separate countries like Washington State, you can go and punch a person in the face and say, well, he had a Trump hat, he's a literal Nazi, and get away with it. You can't, though, go criticize someone, even lightly, that you don't view, you don't agree with being forced to, let's say, involve yourself in a religious ceremony, and they'll crush you. This is the most powerful group of people in the country. And one of the questions that we have to confront in all of this is, what does it mean to be human? Because humans make mistakes, we're sin prone, we have this in us. But what is then, if we have this most powerful group, what is the most important right? What right comes before all others? Well, it's the right to life, because that's the first gift God gave us. So it shouldn't surprise people that the same folks who are chemically and surgically mutilating kids, the same people who are promoting the exact emotion that God loathes, pride, are also promoting ending life, the first gift God gives us. We'll come back with the quick five. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
We have a lot more on the way as we move our partners for this portion of our program, folks. It's our friends over at Black Rifle Coffee. I have to be careful in how much caffeine I drink because I'm always pretty wired, but I want the best cup of coffee I can get, and so that's why I drink Black Rifle Coffee. It is a great great coffee company, and they make some really good stuff. They also have the ready-to-drink coffee. So if you get a can of the Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee, not only are you getting like really good coffee on the road, but you're also helping to raise $1 million to benefit veterans because they're working with the Boot Campaign. If you're not familiar with the Boot Campaign, it is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country. They have these individualized programs designed to show gratitude to our nation's veterans and also provide really customized care to treat the root cause of invisible wounds of war, like post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injuries, chronic pain, self-medication, insomnia, stuff that our warfighters deal with. And Black Rifle Coffee, which in addition to serving premium coffee to people who love America, they are working with the Boot Campaign on this. So every can of that ready-to-drink coffee, whether it's the berry mocha, the vanilla bomb, the espresso salted caramel, they got a ton of different flavors. Every can you get is going to help contribute to making this a massive donation because they want to raise $1 million to benefit vets through this Boot Campaign. And so you can make a huge difference just by, with the ready-to-drink coffee, you help contribute to it. And you can find ready-to-drink coffee cans. You can get them at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana as well and fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. With your help, we can all continue to make a difference. So let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Todd Herman in for Dana. No time to dilly, not even dally. We must roll with the quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's quick five.
This is a sad story. I guess in a way, yeah, no, it's sad. The taking of human life is sad. You heard about this airport worker who got sucked into an engine and died instantly. Medical examiner's office says that this was a suicide. And I don't know how the medical examiner's office would determine that through an autopsy, but probably through video material, etc. And very, very sad. Is it less sad that this person determined to do this on their own than it being an accident? I don't think so. It's still very, very sad. It's a quick way to go. This is an awful way to go. Gosh, what a morbid quick five. How did this happen? You know, it's actually the fault of that guest host. The guy's an idiot. A woman with her family stepped on a fire ant hill. Georgia mother. And this is, I could not think of a worse way to die. And leaves behind a teen, lost his mother after this allergic reaction to these ant stings. By the way, it doesn't need to be a real allergic reaction. Fire ants are enormously destructive. God protect this family, that young person. I don't know how this got so morbid. I apologize. Maybe we can turn it around. How about this? A man, and no, gosh, it was not in Florida. It was in Jamaica. No, this isn't going to turn it around either. You can't do it. Guy decided to consume all 21 cocktails on a menu during a family vacation in Jamaica. And this ended up taking his life. All right, we got to be able to turn this around. I don't know what we're going to do. All right, this, it's not a person. It's an animal. It was an escaped bull. So in this case, I have a rule, by the way, about animals who escape. And I do eat meat. I'm largely a pescatarian for health reasons. And I like the purity of the protein. So largely a pescatarian. Fish don't do a lot of escaping. But I have a rule that if an animal makes a miraculous escape, that animal should be granted freedom forever. No matter what it is, if it's a pig on the way to slaughter and it gets out of the truck or breaks out, runs away, I think we should grant them freedom and, in fact, sort of celebrate them as fighting this hard for their life. This bull was fighting for his life in Pakistan, and he was on the run, and he found a place to hide, but apparently he did not read the local language, and he ran in to a steakhouse. And that's not, I don't think I'd I probably wouldn't decide to hide in a steakhouse were I steak. Well, it could be steak. There is another way that we could all, if God forbid people wanted to do this, that we could all lean into death a little harder, and that would be to get involved with the first AI designed, the first AI designed drug. Now, AI can do a lot of things, like make sentences and make paragraphs and make songs. And there's even an AI that's been designed to deliver sermons. And clearly all it's doing is it's going through the internet and searching for this or that phrase and putting them together in some sort of intelligible way. They're basically great, big, huge plagiarism machines is what they are. But an AI designing drugs, does that bring up any sort of ethical problems when a computer is designing something? You did read about the case, didn't you? Where an AI decided it was going to win a contest between a military team and it. So it decided to go start attacking the military team. And, oh, you can't do that. They changed the rules. No, you can't attack us. You have to get to the objective without killing us. So then it decided to go and turn off the power to the key tools that the team had. No, you can't do that either. Well, what can I do? So I think AI raises all of these questions. When we continue on Dana's show, let me ask you a question. Is there such a thing as value-neutral education? Because there are people who want us to believe that schools can provide value-neutral education. What would that mean? And then what is at the core of the confusion that has brought teachers to the point where many, many teachers, even in small towns, will slip into the education sex that doesn't belong, that's not anywhere near age appropriate? What is at the core of that? And where is the backlash to this? I'll tell you what, the backlash is so pronounced that I don't think that this can be seen as anything other than God allowing people to run this wild and allowing this influence to come up so firmly in our society, because I think it's created this incredibly hard to fail, pass fail test. We'll talk about all of that plus today in Stupidity. It's Todd Herman in for Dana.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
And do subscribe, may I add, to Dana's podcast. Fantastic way to go back and listen to best ofs. You may have said, well, I've heard this. Oh, that's right. This person was, Dana interviewed this person. It's a great way to do that. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on Dana's program. Let me ask a question about schools, the school you attended. What were the values that were transmitted to you from that school? Or from your favorite teacher? If you were to go back and look at that, what would they be? I could go back and say that the values at the high school I attended, this is one, probably I think high school is what we identify with most, because, you know, unless you went to college, I guess. I dropped out of college right after football ended, weirdly. And my little tiny little college football playing at a little tiny community college, I dropped out after football ended. But I would say that the values at my school were sports. That was the big value. And, well, was there academia? No. Test taking, getting into college was a value. Work was a value. From some great teachers, I learned the value of compassion, the value of curiosity, the actions that would go with curiosity. What were the values of your school where you went or where your kids go now? Because there's a lot of news about the changing opinions of people in regard to the schools their kids go to. And this isn't the first time we've been through this. You know that parents are fleeing the government schools. This is not the first time this has happened. A great article in The Federalist points out that after a decision by the Supreme Court, Abington School District versus Shemp, that effectively led to the banning of the reading, a compulsory reading of Bible verses in schools, that led in states, led to a change. When the Bible was taken out of schools, a lot of parents took on the extra cost of sending their kids over to private schools. In fact, it was 12 percentage points between 1960 and 1970 where the shift occurred. So we're not the first generation to deal with this. And when state-sponsored school prayer was ultimately banned, we saw a very, very similar shift of people saying, okay, then I'm going to take on $12,000 to make sure that my kid can go get this education elsewhere. And the case in this article makes the point that schools transmit values, and of course they do. So what are the values that are being transmitted right now to kids that belong in the schools? Because here's the way I would look at this, and it has to go with this book banning thing, this book banning claim, which is an utter lie. One of the ways to confront the book banning claim, and this is what the left is doing, where they're now suddenly the same entities that want to force us to speak words that we don't agree with. and force us to celebrate events that violate our religious faith. Now they're free speech proponents on the other side. So they talk about the don't say gay, which of course doesn't exist, and book banning. So my point on the schools and value neutral education goes like this. You say we're banning books. Question one, can school libraries, do they have enough space to contain all books ever published? And the obvious answer to that is no. Okay, so since they cannot contain all books ever published, how can we make some decisions about what goes into those school libraries? Should there then be a curation process? Because we're not talking about banning books. We're talking about curating books for kids to make sure that in that limited physical space we have, and one would assume a limited budget, we spend that on books that belong in the schools. So according to whom? Great question. Yes, according to whom? I, though an evangelical Christian, and a born-again Christian, I, though, who believe that the one way to the Father is through the Son, Jesus Christ, and I, who believe that it's our job to make disciples, I also don't want the government ever, ever forcing Christianity upon anybody in any way, shape, matter, idea, faction, or form. Why? Because it will repel people. And because if the government touches it, it poisons it. And they won't teach true Christianity, etc., for a ton of reasons. And because the Lord Jesus himself never brought someone to the Christian faith by force, ever, not once. And he could have. With the snap of a finger, he could have. So I don't want that to happen. So my values then, I'll be the first to stand up and say, in the government schools, don't enforce my values. Should the Bible be present then in schools? Yes. Why? Because it is the single most influential book in the world. It is the best-selling book in the world every single year, one of, if not the best-selling book in the world. It is because our system of governance is based upon, largely based upon, biblical morality. So yes, it belongs there. Does the Quran belong there? Yes, because it also has worldwide influence. Yes, it should be available for reading. Should it be studied? Yes. Should the Quran and the Bible be studied side by side? Yes. What of the Jewish texts? Yes, the Talmud, yes. Why? Because it's a third influential religion. So isn't that teaching values? It's not. It's teaching awareness of the society in which we live and studying it and making an opportunity to compare it on a value-neutral setting. How do you do that? You simply compare the components of the faith. Here are the redemptive components of the faith. These are the Ten Commandments. Here's the rules in the Talmud. Here's the, you know, you compare, you discuss, you let the students do this. So value neutral education then would be, we remove from the school any text that is taking a hardline stance on a value outside of acquisition of knowledge or analysis of it. So let's wind this down to this other question of why are so many teachers bought in to sexualizing kids? Because I'll give you this example. This is from a small town in Georgia. And librarians decided to slip a drag book into a program for six-year-olds. This also from the Federalist. And this is from Patrick Daugherty. So when they make these decisions to do this, like with putting this in for six-year-olds, what drives that decision? You know what it is? It's values conscious hypnosis. I know that seems like a weird phrase, but let's break that down. Teachers who give into this didn't get into the profession to say, I intend to mutilate the minds of kids. I intend to make kids more likely victims to sex traffickers. Because, by the way, one of the problems with this form of so-called education is it makes it easier for sex traffickers. How do I know this? Because I've asked cops whose job is to track down sex traffickers, and they've said this curricula breaks down the barriers, where all of a sudden kids think it's quite normal that parents, that adults want to talk to them about sex or show them sexualized pictures, which is what every groomer does, why we call this grooming. So teachers in this hypnosis have been brought to believe that there is this binary status. If you don't make all sexual activity normalized, if you don't make it all available for kids, you are hiding who kids really, really are. This goes to the level of value. value statements are non-academic statements. It is not academic to approach one's sexual programming. That is psychological. That is spiritual. That is parental. How can we say that? Because unless we intend to raise a nation of women who take their clothes off for money or men who perform sex acts for money, unless that's our intent, it does not have a basis in the job world. It does not have a basis in the academic study world. It does not lead to acquisition of knowledge. It does not lead to knowledge, the ability to apply that knowledge in a sense useful to society. If you want to wind it back down to a level of academia, kids' minds are not ready to accept these ideas. They can't yet balance the good feeling that might come from this activity with the consequences. There's no way to get around. It doesn't belong there. So how do we dehypnotize these teachers? By going to them with a mirror. I continue to say this. Go to these teachers with a mirror. Anytime you meet with them, ask them overtly personal sexual questions. So this librarian, she wants to put books in teaching drag to six-year-old kids. Take a meeting with her and sit her down and say, hey, what sex activities do you enjoy? When you have sex, what do you like to do? And how many people do you have sex with? And that's going to shock them. It's called a pattern interrupt. What's going to happen? They go, I cannot believe you're asking me this question. Well, what are you talking about? Oh, it's just sex. I mean, this is what you're teaching our six-year-olds. And it takes that action of reading this stuff into the school, you know, school board meetings and putting it on the record. It takes that to this now very personal level. And we get to say, well, gosh, I'm surprised you're shocked by this. This is something you introduced to six-year-olds. And what's happening in society, the people who push the sexual left, they know this. A majority believe that exposing kids to so-called trans and same-sex agenda does more harm than good. And they say activists who are pushing this have an ulterior motive. How do I know this? McLaughlin and Associates and Summit Polling, they found that. The Talfagar Group and Convention of States, their poll finds that a majority say that in light of the Bud Light and Target backlash, businesses should stop making statements during so-called Pride Month. And Americans overall want businesses to stay out of politics and cultural issues and just provide services and products to their customers. McLaughlin and Associates. So again, what do we do with this information? Because information is only potential power. Once again, you hold up the mirror. You go into businesses that promote pride and you say to them, taking a flyer, and say, hey, we have an adultery pride event and we're promoting people cheating on their husbands and wives. Could we put up a poster in here? We have a cheaters club where we teach people how to do this, how to get away with cheating. And it's adultery. We promote adultery. Oh, by the way, we have another club. People who are kleptomaniacs. It's time that we stop judging these people. Right? Because we're very proud of our kleptomania. This is who we are. This is who God made us. Would it be okay if we hung some signs up promoting kleptomania? Because it's who we are. Or are you not going to affirm us? Hold mirrors up to people and create a pattern interrupt in their mind where they think, gosh, am I really backing something that insane? Because you are. Come back and wrap up the day with today. In stupidity, it's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
If you had to take care of some lefty trying to outsmart you in the Walmart parking lot and missed any portion of today's show, download the latest Dana Show podcast on your preferred podcast platform.
It's Todd Herman. Been a pleasure to fill in for Dana today and this week. Thank you to Radio America. Thank you to Valen and Kane and making sure that I do the best I can filling in for Dana. Incidentally, I saw someone try to attack Dana rhetorically on Twitter for that thing you just heard about the Walmart parking lot. And I think the guy said, I heard a bit of your show and that convinced me it's not for me. Why does it have to be Walmart? And she wrote back and said, because my show is listened to by real people. And a lot of people shop at Walmart. And that's why I said it. And it's probably not the show for you. Fantastic. Don't come at Dana unless you're prepared with your very, very best debate techniques. Certainly don't come in if you're all stupided up, like in Today in Stupidity. You know what? Let's start with, we're going to go down to the bottom of the clip list here. Let's start with some audio from the White House here, audio clip 16.
According to our last poll, 54% to 36% say Donald Trump did a better job handling the economy when he was president than Biden has done so far. You aren't announcing anything new necessarily this week. You are just, you know, highlighting and touting what you've done. Is that enough?
Well, what I would say to you is look at where we were when we came into office, when after 4 years of Donald Trump, unemployment was over 6%. And today we are standing here at a time where unemployment is at historic lows. We've seen inflation come down by 50% over the last year, 11 months straight, inflation has come down. We've recovered, our economy has recovered faster than any major economy in the entire world.
How do you, I mean, is that, well, no, she's probably not stupid. She's just reading the lies off the sheet. But the people who believe this, Lord God, that stupidity. It's almost like something happens during President Trump's term that caused people to be out of work, almost like a complete setup happened. And inflation coming down by 50%, sure. When you pick the highest possible mark and lie further about it coming down, unbelievable that they get away with this. And yet, Liz Cheney, she has herself a question here in audio clip number 15.
What we've done in our politics is create a situation where we're electing idiots. And so I don't look at it through the lens of like, you know, is this what I should do or what I shouldn't do? I look at it through the lens of how do we elect serious people? And I think electing serious people can't be partisan.
Okay. Can serious people also be stupid? Yes. If you combine two factors in humankind, you'll end up with the effect of stupidity, that is arrogance and ignorance. Ignorance is not being stupid. It's a decision to not have the facts. And arrogance is the decision to puff your own self up to a level where you don't need the facts because your brain power is the best. So, yes, we're doing that. And, yes, that's being rewarded. But, Liz Cheney, you don't solve that by doing the same thing over and over again. Want to know what that's a sign of? Insanity. Oh, there's this. You know this thing that's this investigation that revealed that every living president is a descendant of slaveholders except for Donald John Trump? Remember that? Someone somewhere in the newsroom said, breaking news. Versus looking at societal trends that actually matter. There's a guy, he's in a park, and an apparently homeless drug addict has a knife. He is threatening the man's family. So the man does the right thing and he calls the police. But then what happened in audio clip number 14?
He was arrested and charged with simple assault and terroristic threats. Following his arrest, he was transported to the DeKalb County Jail.
Let's go to the squad car, please.
Why is it happening? I'm being arrested?
Yes.
For what? For what? I'll be with you in just 1 second. But still, I will need for you to fill out a statement for him.
I don't want him arrested. I just want him to leave us alone.
No, but he had a weapon on him, and it was terrorist threats.
Brandishing is not a crime with a knife. Brandishing is only a crime for a gun.
Terroristic threats, though, sir.
Because he said, die to me, and had his knife out?
All that was done. The threats, everything.
If I thought you were going to arrest him, I wouldn't call. I just wanted to leave us alone.
I understand, but we still have a job to do.
Now he's going to think I'm doing this because I'm white. He's black, or he's homeless, and I'm not. I don't want.
But did he do what he did?
Yeah, but I don't want him thinking I did it because he's in whatever situation he's in. I just want him to leave us alone.
I doubt that. I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay. Brother, I love your heart for people. B, he's going to kill somebody. He's going to take a life. You did it because the right part of you protected your family. You are not harming that man. You are, in fact, protecting others, protecting the least of these. Wow. That is white guilt inserted into people in a way that creates lack of safety for all of us. Oh, on that point, Daniel Penny has pled not guilty. They made him wear a face mask into the courtroom. to other him, in my judgment. May God forgive people who do that. It's been my pleasure to fill in for Dana. I'm going to see you tomorrow. It's Todd Herman. Get me at thetoddhermanshow.com. Please go be well, be strong, be kind, make every effort to be right with God.